The following program is paid for by Little John Financial Services. The opinions and views expressed may not reflect those of Brook Communications, its affiliates, or its employees.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4. Every weekday, News Radio 1240 KQEN brings you local information at 4 o'clock. Now it's True Wealth, presented by Little John Financial Services. Here is David Littlejohn with True Wealth on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
All right, gang, it is that time of the week. It is the best Tuesday I've had all week, and this is the True Wealth Show. I'm your host, Dave Littlejohn. Joining me in studio...
Again, Matt Dixon. I feel like I've been on this show a few times now.
I know, it feels... Well, we've even added your picture to the graphic.
I know, it made me feel pretty special.
Right, and so now all that means is... You have to take all the phone calls.
Oh, boy. take me off that photo.
Like, wait, we need a new logo.
Hey, what if someone wants to check out this cool new podcast? It's not out yet, though, I don't think. Have we started using it?
I think that it was dropped in the...
maybe.
I think it's in Blueberry. I think we're hosting.
I think
it was dropped there, so you start to go
we look like a
for the podcast. Yeah. You can find
we look
it.
Pretty official now.
Very...
And we're everywhere. We've managed to make it into like iTunes and
distributions. I mean, we're in all the major spots. If you want to find the podcast, now we're just trying to convince more people to listen. And if you are unaware, we're starting to video these things too, and we're trying to break them into segments. So, greetings to all, and hey on camera. Right? So, Matt, we got, I think today, one of the things that I know we've talked about that I want to bring up here is we really want to talk to folks that have company retirement plans today.
But
there's some stuff in the news that I feel like we'd be remiss if we didn't take a moment, because our listeners, I just know you're with me on this. We just need to rant a little bit.
There's so much stuff going on right now. Like the list, we could go all day probably.
Oh my gosh, there's so much to rant about. And then there's some things that are really interesting. Like, so first, Matt, trick question, okay? Because I don't know how you answer it. Does Apple change the world again?
It looks like they're sure slated to do that, right? Like they just released their Vision Pro, their VR goggles. And you might... be like, oh, VR goggles, what? Just go look at the video. These things are insane. You can actually see through them, which a lot of them can't, right? Like Facebook, Meta, they released theirs. You put them on and all you can see is what's, you know, on the screen.
We're about to test Matt on something. Yeah. And we're also going to validate my own age on air here. Ugh. Do you remember a little thing called Google Glass?
I do, actually. And
it's like 10 years ago.
But it didn't go anywhere.
No, it flopped, right?
But Apple users are loyal. They're diehards. And if you release something...
All true. Here's my question. Okay, how many people will pay $3,500 for a pair of goggles?
A lot. A lot more than I think we would care to believe.
That's what I want to know. Mm-hmm. That's what I want to know, because... It seems to me that it's a highly specialized application. It's really expensive. And so they're definitely going to test the markets. I mean, everybody was like, wait a second, this new iPhone's over $1,000. And sales did slow.
Right.
Like significantly. That was a break point. And a lot of folks don't associate the cost of the phone. They just look at the cost of the monthly bill, because most of the time the carrier is helping finance the purchase of the device.
That's a trend anymore, right? When you go to shop for a car, too many people are like, I don't really care what the purchase price is. Just tell me what I have to pay a month.
Yeah, which to me is one of the...
That's ludicrous to me.
Yeah, it's just a really dumb way to
purchase
a vehicle, because it's such a depreciating asset. And you're like, well, let me just saddle on to payments for a long time, paying for something that could have lost all its value. Right? So it's just, it's a really reckless way to purchase a vehicle. And you really can understand why the seller of the vehicle would encourage this sort of attitude or approach, right?
Right. They can charge more for it.
It's just like a lease. You're just buying it, right? Except that you own this liability now.
The finance manager is going to make more money because you're probably going to get stuck with a six or I think, aren't they doing like 7-year loans now on new vehicles?
Yeah. I mean, you can see really long, 84-month loans and stuff like that. You're like, good golly. And then they'll tack 2 or 3 extra months on because, well, we just need you to get to this payment. So they'll just sort of, you know, manipulate those numbers, but what they're really doing is just tacking more payments on. And I know I've driven some finance managers nuts in the past because I've gone in and said, well, you know, I want to pay this. And then they present a different vehicle. And I go, well, for this vehicle, I want to pay that. They said, well, you just said you could make the payments. I'm like, but I'm not playing the game of whether or not I can do the payment. I'm playing the game of, does this meet my value criteria for what I'm paying for?
That's a much better approach.
Yeah. And so, but it's really aggravating if the sale is a game. I'm much more interested in, why don't you just tell me what margin you need to make on the vehicle?
Mm-hmm.
And based on that, we'll decide whether or not the deal happens. Okay. I'm so much more a fan of this sort of transparent price discovery and, you know, it either works or it doesn't, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So that's it. I mean, you don't expect the car company's going to lose money selling you a car. That's bad business. So I don't expect that. I just don't expect to put their kid through college on that one car.
Yeah.
So there you go. Okay. Well, here's the one that's really interesting. So Apple, sure, they throw the virtual reality headset out there. I think that's really interesting. I think there's another one that just from the market perspective, this is kind of a quiet week. We've been sort of slowly drifting higher, although today was kind of a mixed bag. But a lot of tech driving this market right now. We're seeing major indexes that are very heavily tech-weighted. And frankly, our economy is very tech-weighted.
It is.
You know, so we've seen a lift higher, but what happens next week?
The Fed meeting minutes.
Yeah.
So they're going to release the decision on whether they want to raise rates or not.
I know.
You know, for the first time, it seems like they're really torn on what they're going
to
do.
We've seen
so many ones where it's like, yeah, we know they're going to raise rates. Yeah, we know they're going to raise rates. This one seems a little bit different because we don't necessarily know if they are, if they're just
curious how the market views it. You can go Google FOMC, like Fed funds futures, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think it's the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, I think the CME group that does futures for the Fed rate. And you can look month to month at where the projections are based on who's buying future contracts of rates. And it's about a 80% probability that they won't raise rates based on what we're seeing. And about it, so, you know, roughly 20% probability of a 25 basis point increase. I'm not so confident in those probabilities.
Really?
Now, I'm not. I think that it's possible that we still see rates go up, especially if, like, I think it's Thursday, we get another weekly jobs numbers.
Well, and didn't the last jobs report come in looking
hot?
Yeah.
Like, it's, and that's the weird one is you look around and go, it's such a mixed data set when you go, hey, the economy's strong, but everything's so much more expensive that you feel like you can't afford the economy that we're in. So strong, but it's not very fun to be in as a consumer.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to describe it.
So how not fun, would you say? Oh, this is my segue into the big surprise.
Ooh,
right?
What's the surprise?
It's not a surprise. It's in the news. As I understand it, both State Farm and Allstate Insurance will no longer be writing new homeowners insurance policies in the state of California.
Wow. That's a huge market to be
walking away from. And the question is why?
Mm-hmm.
Like, why do you think they're not going to issue new homeowners policies?
Probably because California's been so expensive. There's been a lot of wildfires. There's been, you know, a lot of drought and then a lot of rain causing flooding. They've had so much extremes with the weather.
And then the inflation side of it, the cost of labor going up like it has. So here's my understanding. Fact check it all you want because I've only gone so deep into this thing. But I believe that I think it was Allstate that asked for a 12.5% increase in premiums to cover their risk exposure. And the state of California didn't authorize it. So they said that we're leaving the marketplace. Now, I think people that are there, they get to maintain their policies until renewal. It is unclear if they will renew those policies.
Wow.
Right?
That's a huge shift.
It's a huge shift. And if people are thinking, and I think this is where maybe legislatively the insurance regulators sort of missed conceptually what they were doing. I mean, I think they were playing a game of chicken and just thought, no, we're a huge market. And so they want access to all that premium money. And so they're going to do this. But remember, insurance regulation is not like banking. It's not fractional mm-hmm. reserves.
Yeah.
The insurance companies have to have dollars on reserve.
In order to meet like a crisis.
Their, yeah. To meet their potential obligations. And so actuarially, that market started getting pretty scary.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the issue here, is that it just doesn't pencil for them to stay any longer. And you can try to say, well, insurance companies are evil, but I think property and casualty companies are pretty straightforward, mm-hmm. right? Claim experience costs this much. This is what it costs to pay. And we have to factor in the number of occurrences and how much premium we're spreading that over. Well, what do you do when prices are going nuclear, right? They go out of control like that.
I mean, business-wise, they have to make a decision on what's best for the company.
Yeah. And so this, if any of you were wondering what the knock-on effects of money printing are, this is it.
Yeah, enter the chat right now.
Okay? I mean, we talked about this on this show almost 2 years ago when there was so much money printing around COVID, right? Which I guess you're not supposed to say anymore, but whatever, you know, because like all the algorithms online are going to be like, you can't say that, right?
Mm-hmm.
But there's so much talk about, you know, the disease that shall not be named. Well, all that money printing, it results in inflation. Inflation destabilizes pricing, in this case, because it's going up. And insurance companies can't actuarially predict that. So if you keep moving the bar, it just keeps raising the cost of everything. Well, that's a, you know, this is collateral damage from runaway inflation from money printing.
It yeah, you have to look at the source. The money printing is the source of the problem.
Yeah, and so...
It's happened. It's too late.
Right.
Now we're dealing with the ramifications.
And that's just, and these are really big ramifications. And if you're like, that can't be true, no, it takes a while to have it flood through the system, right?
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't like, oh, we wrote everybody checks and inflation happens the next day. No. People don't all make buying decisions.
It takes a long time for the money to work into the system. I mean, I'm sure you could come up with a good example of how many ways that it takes for that money to
just
finally
look at where it
in.
Is in the purchase of infrastructure, in the medical communities,
mm-hmm.
the number of businesses that received PPP loans.
That's
and,
a great example.
And what was the other one? The EIDL loans. I mean, mm-hmm. like these were all a bunch of
right.
money.
Just because you get a loan doesn't mean you go spend it all right away.
Exactly. And so that was what was at issue here. And anyhow, it's just a lot. That's the knock-on effects.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a real-life example of the combination of bad policy at a federal level, questionable local policy that's driven pricing higher, and then the policy for the management of the natural resource, like forest fires. It's a real controversial thing in the Pacific Northwest. You know, most of the folks, especially us in Douglas County, we're pretty close to this. We have a lot of folks that work in this arena. And make no mistake, there's big money thrown around in that for whether or not you do anything, right? There's money in just being on standby to put out fires and then not even doing anything,
mm-hmm.
but waiting, right? Being on call, there's big money spent. So there's just a lot of mess to this thing. And I think we're starting to see the private sector throw its hands up and go, that's just too many oopsies that we can't overcome.
Yeah.
That does concern me, by the way, as a grander scale picture here, is that if government grows faster than the private sector, it's like the monster that's growing to the point that it's eating itself, right? I mean,
mm-hmm.
like we can't feed it.
Can't feed
big.
That beast. It consumes too much.
So I don't know that we're absolutely there, but we are certainly showing the signs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and this is one of those examples. So anyway, that's what's in the news right now. Run a little long on segment one, but let's grab a break. And
okay.
When we do, stick around. We'll come back and we'll talk more about workplace retirement plans, and why you care. But we got to take this break first. So this is Dave Littlejohn.
And Matt Dixon.
And you're listening to True Wealth on News Radio 96.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
All right, gang, welcome back to the True Wealth Radio Show. Dave Littlejohn in studio with
Matt Dixon.
Matt.
Yep.
This will be on video and podcast, right?
Oh, yeah, it will.
Okay, good. That's all we're just confirming. If you didn't know, then you're just now listening to the program. If you're listening on podcast, you already get it. So.
LittlejohnFS.com. Yeah. That's where you're going to go tomorrow if you need to catch the first segment, which is our awesome update on whatever.
our rants about the world. Mm-hmm. We're going to get down to hopefully some stuff that's going to be useful for you guys as listeners. All right. And what I want to talk about a little bit today, and we're going to sort of start broadly speaking, some things that apply in general across the board. So not necessarily advice, air quotes, right? But stuff that's going to be common that you're going to want to consider in the workplace retirement plan arena.
Yes. Okay?
And if this sounds boring to you, well, then maybe you're already retired. In which case, become an expert so you can talk to the people
who
aren't and help
them. Stick around because we're going to talk about some stuff later on in the show that does apply if you're already retired.
It turns out retirement plans have a lot of overlap. It's kind of like if I were to say, all cars have some things in common. Like all cars have four tires. They're not trucks, right? Like we know that. And, you know, they have a couple of doors, they got a steering wheel, some brakes and an accelerator pedal, like the headlights, like that's just all of the cars have some of those things. So there's some commonality, and retirement plans have some of those features that are just common across the board. Mm-hmm. And then there's some customization features too. And it just depends on which one you have. You know, your plan might look different with a government employer than the private sector, right? So we just want to talk about retirement plans, and there's two parties we care about, right?
Mm-hmm.
Who are the two parties?
The employer and the employee.
There we go.
Yeah.
Right?
I mean,
so
it's pretty basic.
You got the participant, the person that's putting money in the plan that they get to take it with them.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then you have the employer, or sometimes called the plan sponsor. A lot of the show, at least right now, we're going to dedicate to participants, okay? Because as participants, there's some things that we should consider. Like we were just talking during the break. I asked Matt, hey, if there was one thing that you just really wanted to tell our listeners about the topic on the show today, which is just workplace retirement plans, what's the one thing, and that was all you got to say, what would it be?
And the one thing I came up with was, you better be contributing. And I'm like, I know this sounds like it's fall off a log easy, but I know way too many people who don't contribute, and there's a match, right? Like, they tell me, they tell me, oh, I've got an employer and they're willing to, you know, contribute 3% if I do 3%, or if I do 4%, they'll do 3% or whatever. And they just don't put the money in. And they're like, I need the money. I need to spend it. I got expenses. I got bills. And I'm like, hey, you're shooting yourself in the foot.
Yeah. I really agree with that, too. The lowest hanging fruit of retirement plan return is if there's an employer match, get it.
Yeah.
Right? In fact, there's a mathematical case to be made that getting the match only to then take it out early and pay the penalties on it would still leave you with more money than if you didn't do it.
Isn't that a statement?
Okay.
Yeah.
In most cases, that would be true, is get the match and then pay all the penalties to get paid extra and cash it out early and violate the rules of the plan.
You know,
and you may still come out money ahead.
I think that's the one area that I can think of where people turn down free money. I don't know of anywhere else where I've seen people just blatantly turn down the free money. But that's the one spot I see it, and I see it way too often.
Yeah, and that's the part that slays me is, you know, you're going to bring home, let's say, okay, I earned $100, and we're saying put $3 of those dollars into a retirement plan, and the employer's going to put $3 in. Mm-hmm. And you're telling me, I'm sorry, but that $3, I just really need it. And by the way, that $3 is also going to get taxed, and so it's really going to be about $2.50
mm-hmm.
or, you know, $2.25.
So you really need that
$2. I just
really
need that extra $2.25 to make my life work, and I can't afford to save anything.
I say to that, you need to rethink your lifestyle.
Yeah, you need to redesign your lifestyle.
That's a better term for it.
It's possible that, you know, you've done everything and you just can't make ends meet because this world's gotten very expensive.
No, yeah.
But it's not probable. If you have an employer offering retirement plan, odds are good that you have a job that's probably a living wage job.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe not, right? But probably. And you can and should save for retirement. Okay. This, by the way, isn't like, this is the kind of like air quotes advice where I'm like, can you not say that? Like, I kind of feel like you can say that
mm-hmm.
and say, I'm not really risking a whole lot to say you should save some money for a rainy day in the future. And that rainy day could be called retirement or it could just be called later, but you should save some and not spend every dime that you make if you can afford to save some.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that just doesn't seem like there's any liability in that advice.
So what about, speak to the listener who is sitting there and is convicted and they're like, ah, you know, I'm not saving. What should their ideal percentage be? Like, I mean, I don't know.
It's kind of age-based is the thing.
Yeah.
And how far behind the power curve are mm-hmm. you, right? When you're just starting a small percentage and just start to fill the bucket up.
Just do something.
Yeah. It's like any activity is better than zero. And that's true at any point. But the power of compounding is amazing, right? If you mm-hmm. start early and you start storing up money in an account and it's earning interest, and then the interest that it earns interest, and then that interest earns interest on the interest, there's a point at which how much you're contributing is less than the interest that it is earning. And if it really grows for a while, this blows people away, but it really does happen. You reach a point when the nest egg is so big that it's earning more than you were earning working.
And I believe we have a calculator on our website at littlejohnfs.com where you can go and you can just punch in the numbers. It's not complex, right? Like, what if I put in $100 a month into my retirement account and it averages 7%?
Right?
Per year for 30 years
in a tax deferred environment.
Yeah.
Right? And you'll be blown away.
Play around with the numbers.
And, you know, if you want to be more clever about it, you can also factor in inflation.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Because your purchasing power is going to be different, but it's still going to be, generally speaking, historically, the markets have produced returns that are more than inflation. So you are gaining purchasing power, not just preserving, but gaining purchasing power through investing over time.
Mm-hmm.
And this has played out again and again and again. And I've said this before on air too, but like what would make it not play out?
I mean, a black swan event is what we call it, where, you know,
horrific market timing where you needed mm-hmm. giant withdrawals at a point where the market collapsed.
Yeah.
Okay. But here's the other thing. Like, find me a time when the markets have stayed collapsed.
Hmm.
Right? Like, stayed. Like, I'm not saying they haven't done it, but they recover over time. And it's usually, you know, 3 or 4 years and they recover. And then they go on to all-time highs again. Here's the only thing I could see that would really throw it out of whack is if we abandoned the capitalist foundation of the system. Right.
Mm-hmm.
If you're no longer,
then all the bets are off.
Yeah. If you no longer own the product of your labor and you know, so like you're just told what to do and you get what you get, then yeah, all bets are off. But until or unless that happens, and I hope it's an unless, right? And it doesn't seem like that's a necessity that we go down that path. There's some people that are advocating for it, and I, you know, I'll take issue with that. But unless that's going to occur, capitalism tends to self-correct, even in periods of extremes. Right? That's the weird. Now, we've talked about what if the government gets too big and it can't feed itself. Well, nations rise and fall. Okay, but I'll reference to people. Remember, we used to almost be two nations, right? The Confederacy attempted it and it failed. it's not like all of the assets of the Confederacy vanished.
Mm-hmm.
They were repatriated into a different economic system, right? They went from Confederate dollars to just U.S. dollars. It took some time and there was some pain, but these things, capitalism corrects it.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's in its best interest to correct it. And assets have value. So that's what we like to invest that way, is that, because that's how it tends to work out. But I digress. We're a little off the beaten path of retirement plan. That's the one thing, is first and foremost, you got to save in the plan.
Yeah. So that's okay. That's my kind of piece to listeners. What's something that you'd say?
So, yeah, that would probably be the first one. Is you mm-hmm. got to play the game.
Yeah.
Got to be in it. I think it's more about if you have this option, is how can you best utilize it, right?
Mm-hmm.
It can be very passive. Like, it doesn't take a lot of effort here. You usually go in and kind of set it, and it's not that you need to set it and forget it, but there are so many built-in risk management features of a 401k plan, because you're putting money in. I mean, using 401k, you know, generically, but any workplace retirement. Maybe you have a simple IRA. Maybe you have a SEP IRA. Maybe you have a 403b plan. Maybe you have a 457 plan, right? There's lots of different variants of workplace retirement plan, but they all have this kind of foundation of you get to put some money in, and your employer may put some in. Not every employer does. And the question, and it's probably still in your best interest to do so. Probably still. Okay. So let's talk a little bit about maybe why and how, generically, not as specifics advice. Remember, we can't do that on the air because financial advisors have weird rules.
Mm-hmm.
But let's talk about, like, how much should you be putting into the plan, or where should the money be going in different circumstances? And we can unpack that. But
okay.
First, obscene profit break. So we're going to take a break. Stick around. We'll be right back. This is Dave Littlejohn.
And Matt Dixon.
You got True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM at 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Okay, gang, welcome back to the True Wealth Radio Show. Dave Littlejohn in studio with
Matt Dixon.
I don't know why we say that every time.
I don't know.
Like, our listeners are like, well, yeah, you're still the same guy. So welcome back. Okay, we're talking employee and employer retirement plans.
Yep.
And part of your, if you're wondering, like, why and do I care? Yeah, you probably care. And I want to talk nuts and bolts for a minute. You're an employee. You're in a retirement plan. First thing we established, Matt, is got to participate, right?
Yep.
Okay, so that's the low-hanging fruit, especially if there's an employer match. You want to get that match. Well, what are some things that everybody should know about these plans? First of all, there can be structural details to these plans depending on what you have. 401k plans tend to have more options,
mm-hmm.
whereas if you work for now, pensions are even different than that. Okay, so like if you're in PERS or something, there's different set of options. One of the things you need to be aware of is there's something known as vesting.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, no, it's not wearing a vest.
Vests are so 2002. So
I feel like they are, right? Yeah. So it means vesting, as in how much, if you get a match from mm-hmm. an employer.
You don't get to keep all of it unless you're there for a certain period of time, right. Basically.
It's basically an earn-in where you've been around long enough that you are eligible to keep everything.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so there are schedules for this depending on where you are. Now, a lot of people miss something about this. This is a really important detail. If ever you put money into a retirement plan where you have deferred this from your paycheck, so this is not the employer making a match, but you put the money in, there is no vesting schedule for that. Okay? Like, that's a big deal to understand. That's
you mean
yours.
On the portion that you contributed?
Right. On your contribution, that's yours. Right? You put a dollar in the plan, it belongs to you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? if the employer matches some money in there, there may or may not be a vesting schedule. It depends.
Mm-hmm.
How would you know if there's a vesting schedule?
Well, first of all, you could ask.
Yeah. There's the low-hanging fruit. Who do you ask?
Well, probably your HR department.
Sure.
Yeah.
And if you don't have an HR department, ask the boss.
There you go.
Okay. And if the boss doesn't know, ask the person that's administering the plan.
The plan, yeah.
Okay. But most of the time, there's a plan description.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, if you have a simple plan, there are some plans out there for employers. And so this is kind of, the employee doesn't care that much about it. The employer does. But you care as an employee because it defines how much money is going to be in the match and so forth and how much you can put in the plan. Because a lot of retirement plans, if it's not a pension plan, are sort of referred to behind the scenes as defined contribution plans.
Mm.
Okay. You've now been let in on an industry secret. You know the language that they use to sound fancy. Right. And remember, fancy language, you know what that's for? It's for making it expensive.
Oh.
Right. If you can make it sound scary and fancy, it costs more. Right. It's like, no, it's not mashed potatoes. It's a smashed au gratin or something like that. You're like, you mean mashed potatoes, right? No, no, no. If I say it this way, it costs twice as much.
Hey,
okay, fancy restaurant.
We should try that. We should try that at the office. No.
So when you talk about the plan types here, the defined contribution plan means there's a certain amount that you can put into the plan. Like you're allowed to put only so much in.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, like in an IRA, for example, not a workplace plan typically.
Are you talking just a regular traditional
IRA?
IRA
or Roth IRA, you can't put like $100,000 in that plan.
I think they cap it at like $6,500.
Or maybe it's $7,000 this year.
Yeah.
But there's a limit to how much you're allowed to put in because it's a defined contribution.
Mm-hmm. But okay? This was more of a 401k show.
Well,
right?
And the 401k show, higher contribution limits.
That's the piece that people need to know about.
Yeah, so you want to know which plan because you might have a simple IRA.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and a lot of small businesses do this, right? A small business says, hey, you know what? This is an easy plan for us to put in place. And the state of Oregon has requirements for small businesses, right? Small businesses have to have retirement plans or they'll auto-enroll you in the Oregon Saves program. I think that's what it's called. That is basically a Roth IRA, which can produce other problems if you earn too much money.
Right.
Now, if you're ineligible for a Roth IRA and you get enrolled in one, that's
but
a problem.
I just want to jump into it. But what about the Roth option inside of a 401k?
Okay. So, yeah, you're jumping all over the place, but that's real. And there's not an income limit.
That's where I was trying to go with this. Exactly.
Right. But, all right, since we're playing this game,
mm-hmm.
here's the trick question. And by the way, I'm totally setting Matt up for this, so we'll see how he does.
Okay.
Okay. Why would that be a bad idea, potentially?
A bad idea for someone to contribute?
Yeah, it may be good, and it may not be good.
Well,
what would make the Roth option in a 401k a bad option?
I think I got you here.
All right.
If you're a really high earner, okay,
mm-hmm.
you might need the tax break now. So not going the Roth option, going the traditional route inside of your 401k, you could lower your taxable amount now because if in retirement, you know, your income levels are going to be a lot different, it might be better to get the tax savings now than to defer all of the, you know, money into the Roth.
Right. The idea being that if your future tax rate's going to be lower than your current tax rate, putting money in a Roth basically means that you're going to pay the higher rate today.
Right.
And you won't benefit
from the
lower rate.
We'll just play
the
extremes here. Like, I love to play the extremes.
And
so,
that is a real extreme example here. In practice, what we most often see is high earners.
Mm-hmm.
Their income doesn't drop radically
in
the future if they're developing assets that continue to pay them.
Right.
Right. So you find yourself still in a pretty high tax bracket later. And the Roth gives you more flexibility because you can access it and the taxes have already been paid.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So it may be an interesting planning option for you. Okay. So, and how do you know if it's a good planning option?
Ooh. Can I sell it right here?
Oh, man.
Yeah, oh, man. You might want to reach out to a financial professional.
Yeah.
And
is this where we flash our number on the screen?
Yeah. Do you see the hard sell right there? No, but in all honesty, we don't start running the meter right out of the gate, right? Like, we're more than willing to take a look because the 401k might not be the right piece for you. I mean, maybe it's a simple plan, right?
Well, oh, okay. Well, yeah, now we're
oh, I'm jumping us all around.
We're going to let me clarify what Matt's saying just because he's absolutely right. It is. But it depends on which hat are you wearing. Are you the employer or the employee?
Mm-hmm.
Right? If you're the employee, you don't really get a choice.
Right.
Right.
Yeah,
the employer
yeah.
chose for you. If you have a 401k option, that's your option.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But if you're an employer and you're deciding, hey, I'd like to offer a retirement plan, or the state says I must, which one should I offer?
Yeah.
Okay. Now
that's a whole different thing.
Now there are decisions to make as an employer about what you want to do. So I don't want to muddy the water too much for our listeners because a lot of you guys aren't business owners
mm-hmm.
and you're going like, what do I need to know about whether or not I'm going to choose a 401k? You don't. You just need to know that whatever option you have, that one, you should participate in it, and two, that you should pay attention enough to not invest in something inside of it that's inappropriate. Now, what do I mean by that?
I mean, you could mean a couple different things here, so I'm curious.
Yeah, so there may or may not be a menu inside of your plan.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Okay. The menu meaning that you might have a self-directed retirement plan option that you can go in and choose the investments that you want to invest in from a menu that's provided to you by your employer.
Or
you might not, in which case you're along for the ride and you get what you get and you don't throw a fit. I tell that to like my 7-year-old, right?
But I want choices, David, and I'm pounding my fists on the table.
Okay, so if you want choices, first of all, if you're still employed,
mm-hmm.
you can lobby with your HR and the plan sponsor.
You can
say, I want the choice.
Mm-hmm.
However,
you might not get it.
Yeah, I mean,
wah, wah, wah.
Exactly. You're not the decision maker, then that's the issue. If you are a decision maker, then you have some decisions around how much complexity do I want to deal with? How much cost am I willing to deal with? And how much liability am I willing to maintain? Because when you're a plan sponsor, you have a certain fiduciary obligation to your participants.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. This is where it gets slightly more complex. And I don't want to scare anybody that's out there with a retirement plan that's your plan sponsor. I'm not saying like, ooh, you know, the boogeyman's coming to get you for this. That's not what I mean. It just means that you want to follow the rules and you don't want to, for example, do a bundled plan where everybody gets the same investment. And let's say you've got some people that are really young and some people that are really old. And as the plan sponsor, you invest super conservatively and the young people are along for the ride
right.
and they're not getting something that's appropriate for them.
Right. You've invested everyone the same way based on what it is that you want as the plan sponsor, not on the behalf of what's best for the employees.
Right. Everybody's kind of close in age. You maybe can make the case that it's the most cost effective administratively. It's sensible and so forth. And so you can do that. And I've seen business owners choose this option because they want to do specialty things like try to buy real estate inside of their retirement plan mm-hmm. or something like that.
Can you get in trouble if you're not acting on behalf of what's best for the other employees?
So maybe is
yeah.
the answer. Maybe.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I always say, this is one of those things that you don't necessarily tread into clumsily.
Right.
Because while the probability that a problem occurs is pretty low, if it occurs, do you really want that liability?
Yep.
And maybe you're willing to accept that risk. But I can't really say on air, like, you know what you ought to do is just take on a bunch of risk by being reckless.
Mm-hmm.
That seems like a dumb idea to me.
And if you fear that you might have endangered the plan, you can always give us a call and we might be able to look at
yeah,
it for you.
Yeah, I mean, that is for any business owners out there, a lot of folks don't realize that that's part of the package that we
yeah.
help with. You may have an advisor too.
The main thing is just get the help one way or
yeah,
the other.
Yeah,
yeah.
There's a good chance that you're okay too. It's again, it's not like there's this whole gotcha out there where you're going to mess this up. If you're offering a retirement plan to your employees, that's awesome, right? A lot of small businesses can barely afford to do that kind of thing. So if you have that option, that's wonderful. What we're talking about is, for, again, if you're a participant, how do you leverage it so that you're getting the best out of it? And that is, one, participate, understand your vesting schedule, ask for a plan description, or in the 401k landscape, summary plan description.
Oh, can I throw one out there?
Yeah.
Maybe if, don't de-risk yourself too soon. I've seen people do that.
What do you mean?
Well, you know, and I think, and I can't throw all target date funds under the bus, right? But oftentimes people will choose their investment mix, but they cap their upside by oftentimes taking on a fund or some type of investment vehicle that doesn't have, you know, it's not a great investment for them based on their age and the returns that they need in order to achieve the financial goals that they want in the future.
All right. Here's what I want to do.
Yep.
I want everybody listening to hang on to what Matt just said, because I think there's something really critical that we're going to bolt onto it, but we have to take our last break.
Ah.
Okay. So stick around, because the question is, like, if you got this menu and you're de-risking, how do you know if that's happening or not? And how do you know if it's appropriate?
Yeah. Well, there's so much that goes into it.
I've just a couple thoughts on that. We've got to take this last break first. So stick around. This is Dave Littlejohn.
And Matt Dixon.
And you're listening to True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM at 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
All right, gang, welcome back to the home stretch of the True Wealth Show, where we left you hanging at the break.
Yeah.
Matt, you were talking about how people sometimes, you were getting into the investment side of,
yeah,
like, people will de-risk their accounts and their retirement plan on accident.
Yes. Okay?
So, just briefly recap, I mean, like, the target date fund conundrum.
Yeah,
what are
so
we talking about?
A target date fund, to make it really simple, is an investment where, as you get older and as time goes on, the fund itself takes on less and less risk as it approaches its its targeted date.
It sort of automatically becomes more conservative as it approaches a specified time.
Yeah. And I think one of the things that I've noticed, at least, is sometimes, like, say you plan to retire in 2060, and here we are in 2050, fast forward. What if in that last 10 years where you really need to build some wealth and you're trying to achieve that snowball effect, what if it backs the risk off too soon and you don't get enough growth in those last 10 years? That could be an issue, and it could really negatively affect how much money you have in retirement.
Or I'll give you another example just to piggyback this. You go through a period where we're in rising rate environment, and you
have a great
prospectus
example
that says, hey, we have to switch to more fixed income to become more conservative, but fixed income is not conservative in a rising rate environment.
Mm-hmm.
So you didn't de-risk your portfolio, and so the strategy was not really fitting to what you needed to accomplish. And so the danger here is that you can sort of fall asleep at the switch, if you will.
Yeah, you really do need to know the investments.
Yeah. Here's the other issue, is that you may have other investments. And this is where I was going to go with it, is that you might have investments outside of your retirement plan at work. And are they coordinated, right? Is one hand watching the other?
Mm-hmm.
It's probably the most common thing that we run into when you have multiple advisors. Okay, so some people go out there and they put a little money with different people all over the place. And the upshot to that is, okay, Mel, maybe you're more diversified, you get different opinions and so forth. But the downside is one hand watching the other? Do you have a bunch of duplication of effort, duplication of fees, and you're getting less sort of bang for your buck because you're spread too thin in the wrong spots?
Yeah, and then you can also duplicate the investment style where the money is all doing the same type of thing inadvertently. So
this is the problem, too, with a lot of mutual funds, is if you don't look at the overlap inside of it, you know, you own three different mutual funds that are, you know, 60% overlap. So you don't have a bunch of added diversification. What you have is added complexity.
And exactly.
So that doesn't necessarily accomplish what you're shooting for. So
and what if all of those mutual funds that you hold are all just based on the same index? Well, now you just own the index,
well,
right?
Like, if we all have a really high R squared value, then you basically became a phantom indexer and paid for it too.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you don't know what that is, see me after class. But because we talked about it on the show before, you know, phantom indexing is just a way to pay too much for an index fund. It's really what it is.
Yes.
And we don't want to be doing that as investors. So I have one final thing that I wanted to add to the program.
Hit me with it, David. I'm ready.
It's the idea that at some point you may have a retirement plan and you leave your employer.
Ooh. Okay?
And typically you have some options, and it's going to depend on a number of things. It's going to depend on the type of plan you have. Is it a defined contribution plan, like we've talked about, or is it a defined benefit plan, also known as a pension plan, right? So PERS is one of these examples. And PERS is kind of interesting today because if you're a tier two or three, you have the IAP account in there as well, which for all intents and purposes looks a lot like an IRA.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the question is whether or not you leave your retirement plan where it is, or if you take control of it personally and roll it over and do something else with it.
And we see people debate that all the time. Yep. They have a pension. Do I take the monthly stipend or do I take the cash value? And I just want to say on air, you probably should get a second opinion if you don't know what you're doing. If you know what you're doing, fine, whatever. But
yeah,
don't just roll the dice. And
the issue at play for me is that it's not a cookie cutter answer.
No, okay? It's not.
It's circumstantially dependent. So each of you is going to be different in terms of what you need and what you want.
Can I use a really radical example?
Better hurry. We only got about a minute left.
What if your health is horrible? Maybe it doesn't make sense to take the pension at $500 a month. Maybe you would be better off to take the cash value.
Yeah, take the lump sum.
We see that all the time.
Right. And the other issue is sometimes rolling over doesn't put you in a better spot.
Nope.
Maybe it improves your menu of options. Maybe it doesn't. There are cost considerations. There are tax considerations. So the question is, you
find
know,
a
if somebody
fiduciary.
Just says automatically, oh, you should roll over your retirement plan, I would
red
say
flag. Yeah.
That you need to unpack it more than that. It may or may not be right. And that is the fiduciary answer.
Yes.
And be careful about that, because the person encouraging you to do that, often it is in their best interest that you do.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, it doesn't mean it's a bad idea. We roll these plans all the time, and it's because there's an upgrade in a lot of other things that make it worth it. So I'm not saying it's bad. I'm just saying pay attention.
Okay,
bro. All right. And with that, the music is playing, and it's the end of the show. So one last time, Matt, how do they reach us if they need help?
541-375-0898, or check us out on our website at littlejohnfs.com.
All right, well, we're out of time. So until next time, this is David Littlejohn.
And Matt Dixon.
Thanks for tuning in to True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
The preceding program was paid for by Little John Financial Services. The opinions and views expressed may not reflect those of Brook Communications, its affiliates, or its employees.